from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. As Secretary of State Rex Tillerson heads to Moscow this week, the messaging out of the Trump administration has taken a sudden turn. Russian military personnel had to scram as U.S. missiles rained down on a Syrian Air Force base. No fond language for Vladimir Putin out of the president lately. Isolationist-in-chief Steve Bannon bumped from a prime seat on the National Security Council. And the American Secretary of State, ambassador to the U.N., and head of the NSC all have started talking tough on Russia. This hour On Point, as we continue our 100-day spotlight on the Trump administration, the U.S. and Russia after the Syria missile strikes, and as Secretary of State Rex Tillerson heads to Moscow. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What do you make of the change in tone out of the White House on Russia? Theater? A real change? And where do you think the U.S. and Russia are headed? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook. At On Point Radio, here was the sound that mattered, at least for a moment. Last Thursday, U.S. Navy posted a video on YouTube of the launch of missiles from the USS Porter in the Mediterranean Sea, targeting that Syrian airfield. And this from Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, talking with CBS's Face the Nation yesterday, saying one way or another, Russia bears some responsibility for those chemical weapons attacks in Syria.
Regardless of whether Russia was complicit here, or whether they were simply incompetent, or whether they got outwitted by the Bashar al-Assad regime, you would have to ask the Russians that question. But clearly they have failed in their commitment to the international community.
And that was mild compared to the U.S. ambassador to the U.N., Nikki Haley. Here she was talking to the U.N. Security Council on Friday, turning up the heat on Russia, its alliance with the Syrian regime, things she said are going to change.
The world is waiting for the Russian government to act responsibly in Syria. The world is waiting for Russia to reconsider its misplaced alliance with Bashar Assad. The United States will no longer wait for Assad to use chemical weapons without any consequences. Those days are over.
Those days are over. Things are volatile. Reports say that Syria has already resumed operations out of that airbase that the U.S. Hit with missiles last week. On NBC's Meet the Press with Chuck Todd on Sunday, South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham said, hey, watch out, Syria.
Here's what I think Assad's telling Trump by flying from this base. F you. And I think he's making a serious mistake. Because if you're an adversary of the United States, and you don't worry about what Trump may do on any given day, then you're crazy.
On any given day. Joining me first today from New York is David Sanger, national security correspondent for the New York Times. He'll be flying to Moscow tomorrow to cover the Tillerson visit. His latest story is headlined, Tillerson on Eve of Russia Trip Takes Hard Line on Syria. It's at our website, onpointradio.org. You can link to it there. David Sanger, welcome back to On Point.
Good to be with you, Tom.
What is happening in this relationship? It felt like a love fest during the campaign and early days even. Now we've got investigations and a real change of tone and missiles flying. Is this theater? Is this a real change, David?
Well, I think there's an element of real change to it that comes from the reality of facing up to what the Russians have been doing, not just in our elections in a cyber way, but in the intimidation of European allies, of NATO, of the continued action in Ukraine, and then, of course, the continued support of Assad. I think in this particular case, you saw the president react in a very human way, in a very emotional way, to those awful scenes of the children who were killed by the sarin gas or who were suffering so. I'm not sure that he's linked that yet to a strategic plan for how to go deal with Russia, but it certainly has changed the way that Mr. Tillerson is going to have to deal with the Russians when he gets to Moscow, because you now have the United States reinserting itself, albeit briefly and just in a single strike, in a war in which we have stayed out militarily and engaged diplomatically during the Obama administration. Now, Mr. Tillerson indicated in his interviews yesterday that he, too, recognizes the need to engage diplomatically, and in fact, the diplomacy he described sounded an awful lot like what John Kerry was doing for the last 18 months of the Obama administration.
David, could we back up for just a minute to the U.S. attack last week on that airfield? It seemed like a big deal at the time. I mean, it was the many dollars worth of Tomahawk missiles in the air, 59 of them. I don't know, what is that, $60 million or something? But we now have these reports that they're already using that field again. There was this talk that the runway itself wasn't really wrecked, that lots of notice was given not only to Russians but to Syrians there. Was this a tough hit? I mean, how tough was it, or was it theater?
Well, you know, in all of these cases, you always end up discovering that these strikes on specific military targets are not quite as dramatic as they first seem when you watch the image on TV. I think the goal here was to destroy a number of his aircraft in the hangars, and it looked from the photos as if that happened. It was not to destroy the runways. It's just the wrong weapon for that. You have to use something else, and you probably have to do that, or more effective way to do that is from bombers in the air, and I think nobody wanted to be in a position where you could run into Russian aircraft. So it's not entirely surprising that they're out there running planes off those runways again. And it tells you that satisfying as these strikes may be, they don't add up to a real strategy to either end the civil war or even address Assad's attacks using conventional weapons on his own people, which is how most of those 400,000 plus people died. So, you know, yes, it's a good thing to create the norm that we shouldn't be using chemical weapons, but let's not confuse that with a broader strategy to end the war.
And yet, administration officials near the top have been talking as though they're rolling out a new view here. I mean, here was this is General H.R. McMaster. This is the new National Security Advisor, Donald Trump's, that is, on Fox News Sunday, saying Russia needs to make some big changes.
This is part of the problem in Syria, is Russia's sponsorship for this murderous regime. And so we would want to appeal rationally to Russia. This is a great opportunity for the Russian leadership to reevaluate what they're doing, I mean, why they are supporting a regime that is committing mass murder against its own people. And so Russia could be part of the solution. Right now, I think everyone in the world sees Russia as part of the problem.
H.R. McMaster is saying it's a chance for Russia to reevaluate what they're doing. Is the White House really reevaluating its assessment of Moscow, David?
Well, that's a good question, because from the confirmation hearings forward, you have heard Secretary Tillerson and Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis and Nikki Haley all sound a far tougher, more traditional viewpoint about how to deal with Russia than you've heard from President Trump. And it's only this past week that President Trump has said he is disappointed in the Russians, which is about as mild a way to phrase it as I can think of. So he hasn't come around there. So I think one of the questions is, by showing up on these TV shows, making these statements, doing what Nikki Haley has been doing at the UN, are they trying bit by bit to drag the president around to what would be a much more traditional Republican view of dealing with Moscow? And I've had Republican members of Congress and some members of the administration say to me that they think by this summer we're going to have a pretty normal, contentious relationship with the Russians. And I think we're probably getting there already pretty fast. The only one who's bringing up the rear on this is the president himself.
If that's the case, David, what was all that about? What was that all about last year during the election campaign, during the early weeks of this administration? There was such a different tone. It seemed to be rooted in a desire for a different understanding. The intelligence chiefs sat down with Donald Trump and said that there was circulating dirt on him that Moscow had. But whatever the reason was, there was such a different tone. How do you look back now on what was, if it's evaporating?
Well, one way to look at it is that the president himself, the most charitable way to look at it, is going into this the way President Obama did 8 years ago when he attempted the reset, or that President Bush did after 9/11 when he suddenly discovered that Russia was a necessary partner in the war on terrorism. That's the most charitable way. The question that the House and Senate investigations are looking at is whether or not there was any influence in the campaign and collusion with the Russians or with Russian agents or with members of the campaign. And we don't know the answer to that yet. It was an oddity, a great oddity in the campaign that a presidential candidate in Donald Trump, who spoke so severely about China, so severely about some of our allies for not contributing enough, whether it was Germany or Japan or South Korea, never had anything of an unkind word to say about the Russians. And that remains something of a mystery. And the question is, did this come from some heartfelt sense? Did it come from the perception of Russia that he got during his business dealings there? Or did it come from some kind of a relationship that we haven't fully figured out yet?
David, never mind.
I'm not sure when we're going to know that.
Never mind the missiles for a minute. Is it possible that this is all just a kind of very elaborate theater to take the heat off as these investigations bore in on the Trump camp to look at odds with Russia?
Well, could be. If that's the case, I mean, there are many arguments in favor of why one should have done even a symbolic strike, and that's all this was, in Syria. And those main arguments have to do with showing Assad that he does not have free rein. Now, it also had an incidental effect of sending a message to Assad's great supporter, who is Vladimir Putin. So I guess the question that you're raising here, Tom, is, you know, was this essentially a wag the dog kind of event? Strikes me that it's not likely to divert anybody very far from the Russia investigation.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the U.S. and Russia after the Syria strike. Sound of it. Syrian state TV aired footage, anyway, from a cell phone camera, which reportedly showed those American missiles hitting Al-Sherat Air Base last Thursday. We're looking at this U.S.-Russia relationship with Rex Tillerson on his way to Moscow. After all Donald Trump's effusions for Vladimir Putin, with investigations swirling, we're asking, where does this relationship stand? David Sanger of the New York Times is with us. He'll be headed out to Moscow to be there to cover Tillerson's visit. Tillerson already in Pisa at the G7 meeting. You can join us this hour. What do you see going on here? Do you see a real change of U.S. attitude or a convenient toughness as investigations look at election season potential collusion between the Trump camp and Moscow? Was last week's U.S. airstrike on Syria significant? Was it just theater? What's the lasting effect of it? And what's the message Tillerson is taking to Russia out of all this? What's the message you think he might hear back from the Putin government? On ABC's This Week yesterday, the normally taciturn Secretary of State called Russia out, not just on Syria, but its interference as well in elections in Europe and beyond.
We will continue to talk with them about how this undermines any hope of improving relations, not just with the United States, but it's pretty evident that they are taking similar tactics into electoral processes throughout Europe. And so they're really undermining any hope for improved relations with many European countries as well.
Rex Tillerson talking tough, acknowledging electoral meddling by Russians there. You haven't heard a lot of that from the White House. Talking with Fox News yesterday, President Trump's national security advisor, General H.R. McMaster, said the U.S. strike on that Syrian airfield was less a game-changing military action, more a message to the Assad regime, but also to its allies, Russia and Iran.
What's significant about this strike is not that it was meant to take out the Syrian regime's capacity or ability to commit mass murder of its own people, but it was to be a very strong signal to Assad and his sponsors that the United States cannot stand idly by as he is murdering innocent civilians.
A similar message coming out of the U.N. ambassador, Nikki Haley, here on CNN's State of the Union on Russia and Iran.
We're calling them out, but I don't think anything's off the table at this point. I think what you're going to see is strong leadership. You're going to continue to see the United States act when we need to act.
Joining us now from Washington is Ambassador John Negroponte. He was Deputy Secretary of State in the Bush administration. He was the first ever Director of National Intelligence. He's now at George Washington University's Elliott School of International Affairs. John Negroponte, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom.
And with us from Stanford, California, is Ambassador Michael McFaul, former U.S. ambassador to Russia. Michael McFaul, welcome back to On Point. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Michael McFaul, now a senior fellow at Stanford's Freeman Spugli Institute for International Studies and the Hoover Institution there. John Negroponte, what do you see unfolding here in this U.S.-Russia relationship under the Trump administration in the last week?
Well, obviously, there's been a pretty significant shift. I think it was about time. I think the strike was a good idea. I think it sent the kind of message that the National Security Advisor was talking about. I think that Mr. Tillerson was pretty clear that this, in the immediate, is directed at the fact that Bashar al-Assad used chemical weapons. And I think the president was trying to illustrate that he can take a decision quickly. This happened a matter of, 72 hours or whatever after it had taken place, rather than equivocating as President Obama had done previously. Now, what does it mean for the U.S.-Russian relationship? I think that remains to be seen. Definitely, the secretary and our ambassador to the U.N. have taken a firmer line vis-a-vis Moscow, but I'm not clear as to what is going to come out of that meeting. I hope he holds to the things that he said yesterday. Sometimes we get taken in, I think, by some of the Russian diplomatic offers, and maybe they'll be thinking of some stratagem to soften his message. But I think we need to hold firm to the concerns that Mr. Tillerson expressed yesterday.
Ambassador McFaul, Michael McFaul, those have not been often expressed by this administration. Of course, there hadn't been a chemical weapons attack before. Nevertheless, there's been a sense that Trump was looking for a new kind of relationship with less of this kind of language, even a sense in really skeptical quarters that he was somehow conflicted or compromised in his relationship with Moscow in a way that would not permit him to be tougher. What do you see emerging here, Michael McFaul?
Well, without question, candidate Trump said many things that were interpreted in the Kremlin and here in Palo Alto, too, as being very pro-Russian. They were unorthodox statements against the grain of Republican Party and Democratic Party thinking on Russia. He said things like, just, you know, we need to get along. And he suggested we should lift sanctions. He even said he would look into the recognition of Crimea as part of the Russian Federation. And when put on the spot a couple of times, not just once, to talk about the way that Putin behaves, he said, well, we do a lot of killing, too. Since he's become president, a couple of things have happened. Number one, he's brought onto the team people that have a different view than he does. Secretary Mattis, he's my former colleague here at the Hoover Institution. He has a different view than that about Russia. H.R. McMaster has a different view. He was coming actually to Stanford. He was supposed to, until he got his new job, to come discuss how to deter Russian aggression in Europe. Where they're at now, just to underscore something that John just said, is they haven't decided what their policy is yet. They haven't gone through the interagency policy review process. They just hired their person, Fiona Hill, for Russia at the National Security Council just last week. And so Tillerson is going to Moscow before they've done that policy review. And I think that's why you see this mixed messaging.
David Sanger, you're headed to Moscow to cover this Tillerson visit. Is it clear as yet whether he will, in fact, meet with Vladimir Putin, David?
It isn't. We were certainly left with that impression as he was preparing for the trip, but that was prior to the Syria strike, and it's been nowhere on his official schedule. Now, that's not entirely unusual, and Mike can speak to this better than I can because he's prepared government officials for those. But if you don't have a president going where the president of the United States, where it's obvious they're going to meet the president of the country, it's sometimes a little unclear. In this case, if Mr. Tillerson took his first trip to Moscow and simply met with Sergei Lavrov, the foreign minister, who he has met with elsewhere in the world just in recent weeks and talked to on the phone repeatedly, it would raise the question, why did you bother? Especially because Mr. Tillerson is not unknown, of course, to Vladimir Putin. When Mr. Tillerson was the chief executive of ExxonMobil, he dealt with Putin extensively. He's got a pretty well-formed opinion in his mind about how step-by-step he needs to go deal with him. I think the expectation for this trip was that he would meet with him and that they would begin to discuss some kind of common program against ISIS in getting getting ISIS out of Raqqa. Of course, it has been a great ISIS stronghold, and that he was going to start there and try to build it out. So if he doesn't meet Putin, that would probably become the headline. I suspect by the end of the trip, he probably will have met him.
We've got callers for all three of you. Tom in Burlington, Wisconsin. Tom, you're on the air.
My sister Mary met Putin when she was in Russia, and she found him to be a very charming, charming man, and she gushed about him. But my question is this. Can the United States and Russia possibly find common ground and work together for a regime change, if there is going to be, we want a regime change and sort of do it in a peaceful way? Could we offer President al-Assad, a golden parachute, a guarantee him safe passage, a safe place, give him money? How much money would it cost? Or is it beyond that, or should we have done it sooner? Or what is your feeling on it? Is it all possible?
We'll pick it up right here. John Negroponte, could the U.S. and Russia effectively work together to remove Bashar al-Assad? And would Moscow have any interest in that?
Possibly over time, although we've learned through hard experience that regime change is not the easiest thing in the world, particularly in the Middle East. So I don't think that's going to be the first order of business, and I think Mr. Tillerson made that fairly clear. The priority is going to be on focusing on the fight against ISIS. But I'd like to interject another mm-hmm. point here,
yes,
which
please.
Is all this talk about Syria and what we might do collaboratively with the Russians, in my opinion, distracts a little bit from what I think is the more serious problem with Russia, and that's their behavior in Europe. That's the issue of Crimea and the Ukraine and their aspirations towards the near abroad. And I think that's – and the eyes of not only the world but obviously very specifically the Europeans are going to be on how that whole situation evolves between us and the Russians. And I think that's the more important of the two issues.
Describe the main elements in motion there, John Negroponte. I mean, we've seen the new nuclear facilities in – is it Kaliningrad? We've seen Russian support alleged for nationalist candidates on the continent. There's been a lot in motion. What are the points of concern to your mind there?
Well, let me mention one or two, but then please ask Mike, the expert on Russia. But I think obviously the continued occupation of the Crimea, which we must never recognize, and we must hold Russia's feet to the fire on that. Their behavior in the Donbass, in the eastern part of the Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe I could pass the ball to Mike on these other questions that you asked.
Mike, the sort of rundown of things that have Europeans on edge here, those who are wary of Moscow.
Yeah, well, first of all, just to your caller's point, I worked in the government talking about Syria for 4 years, trying to cooperate with the Russians to negotiate a peaceful transition of power. We called it Geneva One, then we called it Geneva Two.
Yep.
Then there was Vienna. Then there was the meeting of Lavrov and Kerry at the Munich Security Conference a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the result of that all was zero. So I'm not very optimistic that they will be a partner here. Having said that, I do want to underscore that Putin does not have some fond personal relationship with Assad. He's just against regime change. But to John's point, yeah, we had the portfolio of how to deal with Russia is much bigger than Syria. It includes all the things mentioned. There's still no peace in eastern Ukraine. 10,000 people have died there. That war is still ongoing. And the other point that we talked about earlier, Russia interfered in our presidential election last year. They violated our sovereignty in a way to help one candidate. Very striking to me that Secretary Tillerson talked about that yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
They don't think that they paid much of a price for it. And so they're using those same instruments of power to try to influence elections in Europe. And we have got to come up with a better plan to deter that kind of interference.
We go to Pauline in Atwater, Ohio. David, yes, please.
Jump in with a quick point here, because I think Mike made a very important point. In the interviews yesterday, Tillerson did not have to mention the election.
No, he didn't.
And he did not have
exactly.
to make a comparison between what the Russians were doing in Europe now and what they had previously done in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that that sent a really important message, not just to the Russians, but back to the White House. Because even today, even in recent weeks, you have seen tweets from the president in which he has basically said the Russia investigation is a phony, and, you know, the real issue is leaks, and, you know, that's the biggest story, he told two of my colleagues mm-hmm. when they were in seeing him in the Oval Office a week ago. And Tillerson was basically saying, no, we have to deal head-on-head with the Russians about election interference. And I thought that was a bit surprising.
And it was explicit. He said, talked about election meddling, quoting him here, not just with the United States. But it's pretty evident that they're taking similar tactics into electoral processes throughout Europe. The U.S. Secretary of State acknowledging what the Trump White House has generally been loath to acknowledge. Pauline in Atwater, Ohio, you're on the air.
Thank you. I think that President Trump knows exactly what he's doing, and his plan in the long run is to eventually get the sanctions lifted in Russia, which, of course, is what Putin wants because their economy is not doing well, and to get the trillions of dollars in oil there. And he will do this in working with Putin. I think Putin will go do what they can to remove Assad from Syria. Trump will turn a blind eye to all the other problem areas that Russia is causing. And that's the ultimate goal, is to bring in trillions for Putin and all the other oligarchs for Trump and all the other Russia connections that are in his cabinet.
John Negroponte, what do you make of that calculus? A deal on Assad, Russia would sacrifice it in return for dropping sanctions over Crimea, Ukraine?
Well, I just I don't see that happening, and I think that's maybe too singly focused on Russia and the lifting sanctions and the oil, and forgetting that we have alliances with Western Europe. They've got tremendous concerns, and I don't see them accepting that kind of approach. Let's remember that in the education of a president, and I think what we've seen in the last few days is the continuation on this steep learning curve that they're on includes getting to know his peers in the international community much better. And one thing I want to commend the president for is the frequency with which he has received foreign visitors and talked to others over the telephone. And as you know, Tom,
yep.
the agenda of international meetings becomes sort of fast and furious mm-hmm. for presidents of the United States. They go to NATO meetings, they go to UN meetings, they go to APEC summits and everything else. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the year, Mr. Trump will have met probably most of the significant leadership of this world. And I think his peers are going to start having influences on him that we had not previously anticipated.
Michael McFaul, will you grant that to the president? There's an education curve underway here. The education of a president is unfolding, and that, you know, may significantly change the less deeply tutored views we saw during the campaign.
Absolutely. You can't meet with Chancellor Merkel and not talk about the Russian threat and the need to keep sanctions in place. And yet, at the same time, I just want to underscore how early the Trump administration is in thinking about their Russia policy. Your caller mentioned lifting of sanctions and the trillions. I don't know if it's trillions, but the biggest joint venture deal ever penned between Americans and Russians was the Rosneft ExxonMobil deal. By some accounts, it's worth about $500 billion decades into the future. That was signed by Rex Tillerson. And when I was in the government, we applauded it as a great advance in trade and investment in Russia. And I know there are some in the Trump administration that want to get that deal back on track.
This podcast and the following message are sponsored by Blue Apron. Blue Apron is the fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service you've heard about. Its mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to all. They support a more sustainable food system, set the highest standards for ingredients, and make it easy and fun to cook. You decide which recipes and how many meals you want each week. Change, pause, or cancel anytime. Learn more at blueapron.com/onpoint. Go now and get your first three meals free plus free shipping at blueapron.com/OP.
Hi, it's Tom Ashbrook. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to ask you about you. At On Point, we want to learn more about our listeners with a short survey. It's anonymous, it's easy, it'll just take a couple of minutes to complete. If you'd go to wbur.podcastingsurvey.com to complete the survey right now, we'd really appreciate it. That's wbur.podcastingsurvey.com. This survey will be really helpful to us, so thanks. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the U.S. and Russia after the Syria strike, with Rex Tillerson on his way to Moscow, after all Donald Trump's effusions for Vladimir Putin, with investigations swirling in Washington. We're asking, where does this relationship stand? Tougher language over the weekend from senior officials in the Trump administration, right near the top, on Russia. Here was Rex Tillerson. He's in Pisa in Italy at a G7 meeting now, headed on to Moscow, on ABC's This Week. He said he'll ask his Russian counterparts about their past commitment to ensure Syria has no chemical weapons.
And why Russia has not been able to achieve that is unclear to me. I don't draw conclusions of complicity at all, but clearly they've been incompetent, and perhaps they've just simply been outmaneuvered by the Syrians.
Nikki Haley at the UN, same theme, tougher language.
Either they knew that there were chemical weapons, and they knew there was going to be chemical weapons use, and they just hid it from the international community, or they're being played for fools by Assad, by him having chemical weapons, and they're just in the dark and they don't know anything about it. So they now have to answer for this. How can they, with a straight face, cover for Assad? Because if they're covering for Assad, then what are they really saying? They're saying, by covering for Assad, that they knew that it was there, or they were incompetent by having chemical weapons there in the first place.
Tougher talk from U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Nikki Haley there. David Sanger from the New York Times is with us, headed out to Moscow with Rex Tillerson. Former U.S. Ambassador to Russia, Michael McFaul, is with us today from Stanford, California. Ambassador John Negroponte, former Deputy Secretary of State in the Bush administration, former Director of National Intelligence, is with us today. You can join us. How do you expect the former Exxon chief, Secretary Tillerson, who's known Putin for a while, to deal with the Russian leader? Robert in Madison, Wisconsin. Robert, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yes. You know, we're talking about the learning curve of a president. When he was elected, the first thing I said that scared me is there's always a general in your ear that wants to launch missiles, and there's always going to be somebody in your other ear that's going to tell you it's going to help your poll ratings. And not only is it going to help his poll ratings, it's going to help his, you know, the crisis here with the Russia investigation. So it was a win-win-win for Trump. And I don't think, I mean, he's taking the gloves off and he's bombing civilian areas himself. So I don't know how sympathetic he was for these pictures. I think it's totally political. It's so obvious.
I don't know about bombing civilian areas. I mean, this was a strike on a Syrian Air Force airfield. But Ambassador Negroponte, do you see a serious statement in this strike or thin theater? You were complimentary of the quickness with which he took the action.
Right.
Others were concerned. I mean, Barack Obama went to Congress and they said no, including all the Republicans, as I recall.
Well, I think we have to take these events on their face. So you have the President of the United States solemnly stating that he did this. I think we shouldn't underestimate the impact that events have in international relations. Events can truly modify attitudes. And I think Mr. Trump and his team were deeply affected by the way they saw these chemical weapons being used by the Syrian government. Now, I think we can legitimately ask, what is the follow-through going to be? And is this really going to be some sort of turning point, or are we going back to the same old, same old? I have a feeling it's going to be the former, that there's going to we now have a team in getting into place that's going to be able to evolve a more detailed strategy. But to Mike McFaul's point earlier, I think he's very right in saying we're just getting that team in place. We really got to have a good review. And then we have to thoroughly analyze what's the policy towards Syria going to be, what's the policy towards Russia and Europe going to be, and follow that forward. I don't think we can just react, be in a totally reactive mode. We got to get more in a strategic mode, and I'm hoping that this leadership that we have now in the foreign policy area and the national security area is going to be able to bring that to pass.
John Negroponte, allow me to ask you, because you were former director of national intelligence, and this stuff's a little tawdry, but We all read back in January that the intelligence chiefs went to visit Donald Trump in Trump Tower and laid out for him allegations that Russian intelligence services had compromising material and information on his personal life and finances, maybe his behavior when he visited Moscow, some pretty embarrassing things we've read. If they're true, I don't know. But they took it seriously enough to take it and lay it out in front of him. You were director of national intelligence. Do you see this president having full and free reign and range to act in the interest of the United States here when he's been told that there's this kind of compromising material, at least reports of it in the background?
Well, yeah, but I wouldn't assume that that's necessarily correct. I have no idea about the details of what the intelligence people told the president. I'm not privy to that. But again, I think you have to take things on their face value. So I just don't I don't give much credence to that. And I think that we have to trust the president to do what he perceives to be in the best interest of the United States. And you're seeing the shifts right before your eyes, people being replaced, a new team being built up, president changing attitudes towards particular issues. There was really kind of a pivot there that took place in the wake of the chemical attacks. And I guess the real question is, how lasting will this be? And will this be just the first step, or will it be something that's, you know, happens once and is forgotten? I'd rather think it's going to be the former.
Michael McFaul, do you trust this president to follow a sort of straight learning curve here, act in the interest of the United States, despite the collusion allegations that are being investigated now, despite whatever the intelligence chiefs told him in Trump Tower?
Well, I hope that the president of the United States would act in the interests of American national interests. Of course, those are in the
eyes of the beholder. But you have to acknowledge the legitimacy of that question when we have these investigations going on, and Americans are sitting here reading these reports. I mean, it's a fair question for Americans to entertain. One would hope, of course, as you say, but isn't it a fair question?
Well, my point would be, let's get back to remembering that Russia, I'm going to say it again, violated our sovereignty last year. And we've kind of moved on. You know, we're not even talking about it. And I want us to talk about it, not least because I want all of Americans to understand what they did. And B, I want us to come up with the policy prescriptions to prevent it in the future. Because as far as I know, unless it's been something classified, we have not done one thing to protect our election in a more robust way compared to last year. Having said that, though, Tom, I don't want to avoid your question. I know about the dossier. I know it was a brief to the president, president-elect. I don't know what the contents were. I don't know what they have on them. I would just say this. I've thought a lot about it, and I just don't see how you blackmail the president of the United States with some, you know, tape that you may have obtained when he visited in 2013 or before. Where does that transaction happen? Who sits down at the table and say, if you don't lift sanctions, we're going to lift this tape? I find that hard to believe. What I worry a lot more about, and what I hope the investigative committees and the FBI will get to the bottom of, was there collusion between people close to the president and Russian officials during the 2016 election? There's enough circumstantial evidence about that to make me worry, and we just need to know the truth to that question first and foremost.
David Sanger, does it look to you as though this attack last week in Syria is somehow proof that President Trump is not compromised by the investigation focus or by some dossier out there? David, are you there, my friend? Ooh, David seems to have dropped off. Let's get a call.
He's flown to Moscow.
He's on his way to Moscow. Let's get a call from South Dakota, Yankton, South Dakota. Michael's calling. Hi, Michael. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. You know, firstly, I'd like to say it's worrying to me to be asked to take things at face value from a president who has so consistently lied. But beyond that, I'm wondering about Tillerson's connection still with Exxon. If there is a $1 billion deal in the works that lifting sanctions could help go through.
$500 billion plus, Michael. $500 billion plus.
That would be a big bargaining chip.
Yeah. $500 billion plus, Michael McFaul was saying. Where does that stand, Michael? Can you describe for our listeners where that ginormous deal stands at this point and how it could sit in the backdrop?
Well, after sanctions were put in place in 2014 in response to Russia's it wasn't actually annexation. It was that was one set of sanctions. The next round of comprehensive sanctions was put in place after Russia supported separatists in eastern Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And that joint venture basically has been on hold. They're not going to quit it. It's a decades-long thing. ExxonMobil needs to be in Russia to exploit those oil deposits in the Arctic. But right now it's been on hold. And before this incident in Syria, before the bombing, there was lots of talk from various officials about what might be the deal that we could do with the Russians to lift sanctions.
Okay, if I could jump in here,
yes,
Tom,
because
I've been having this argument with friends and colleagues for the more than 50 years that I've been involved in foreign policy. Mm-hmm. And that is the question of to what degree is it or is it not a major factor in the conduct of a foreign policy? I was ambassador to Iraq, the country with the second or third largest oil reserves in the world.
Yeah.
And a lot of the critics of our policy said that we went in there because of the oil. And I personally witnessed both the president and the vice president, both of them oil men, by the way.
Yes,
they have oil
the Bushes,
backgrounds.
Sure.
Bending over backwards to demonstrate that we'd not gone into Iraq because of the oil. In fact, I even had a discussion once with T. Boone Pickens, mm-hmm. the oil man, who criticized us and said, well, why didn't you do more to get access to their oil? And I said, the president really didn't want to send that message. And I always think that, or I think that generally, the role of oil in our foreign policy tends to be exaggerated.
Even when the Secretary of State, I mean, this isn't Dick Cheney or George Bush the First, you know, this is the former CEO of Exxon.
Well, Cheney was the CEO of Halliburton, for crying
out
loud.
Well, yeah, but they made a killing off the war itself, never mind the oil, right? David Sanger, I think we've got you back. I hear you there.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I somehow dropped out. I just wanted to make the point that probably Rex Tillerson is the least suited person of anybody I could think of to lift the sanctions and do something for ExxonMobil. I mean, it would be, if it happened, so transparent that I think that probably almost any of the other 300 plus million Americans that the president could have chosen to be Secretary of State would be in a better position to do that, because Mr. Tillerson knows what the accusation would be. I thought it was sort of interesting yesterday that he basically said in at least one of his interviews, there's no discussion underway of lifting sanctions until the Russians change something in both the annexation of Crimea and their activity in Ukraine, which is what the sanctions are all about. Now, he didn't say what that change would have to go look like, and you could argue that incrementally he may well try to push them in that direction. But I think it would be pretty tough for this Secretary of State to do something that looked like it was on behalf of ExxonMobil.
Michael McFaul.
And Tom, just to add to that, let's be clear. No major policy change is going to happen in U.S.-Russian relations this week. That's not the job of Secretary Tillerson, and that's not the way it works in Russia. There's only one decision maker on foreign policy, or frankly, for any policy that matters in Russia, and that's Vladimir Putin. And he's only going to make major changes and have a serious discussion with President Trump. Let's be clear about what the mission is this week. I do want to underscore something that David said. If Secretary Tillerson does not meet with Putin, that is a major change. When I was in the government, Secretary Kerry, Secretary Clinton, National Security Advisor General Jones, National mm-hmm. Security Advisor Tom Donilon, they all met with the presidents of Russia when they went to Moscow. If that meeting doesn't happen, that's a setback. But that's not where business gets done in U.S.-Russian relations. It only happens at the top.
What do you think Russia wants out of this meeting, Ambassador McFaul?
I think there's still hope. Reading the tea leaves, I think there is still hope that they can engage with the new president, President Trump, to get some of these things done, including lifting sanctions, as we've been talking about. Those expectations are much lower today than they were last November. There's no doubt in their mind that they think there's less of an opportunity. But I don't think they've come to the conclusion yet that there's zero opportunity. They still see in Trump a guy that might want to do deals. That's what he talks about. And they have prepared some deals, by the way. They have some ideas, some transactions that with the right person on the other side of the table, they might still get done without the attack in Syria being the, you know, the period to it all. After all, they got a lot of big things they would like to do with the United States. And I don't think Putin is ready yet to pivot away from them all just because of this one attack against Assad.
John Negroponte, we don't see much evidence at all of Russia looking to get out of the Crimea again, or even to become less active in the Donbass in eastern Ukraine. So do you see any running room here for this relationship, despite the friendly noises of the president earlier?
Well, I mean, there are areas where over the years we've actually cooperated with the Russians and with the Soviet Union previously, whether it's on arms control, disarmament, various kinds of multilateral issues, working on the Korean Peninsula, which is mainly an issue to do with China, but denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula is an issue that the Russians have an interest in. I think there's opportunities to continue to work on Syria, notwithstanding their support for Bashar al-Assad, because there is a process that's been created by President Obama and John Kerry, and that could be given some life to try to focus on defeating ISIS in the first instance and so forth. So, I think there are things to talk about, but I doubt it will be with regard to the Ukraine as the first issue.
And the Syria strike, whatever you make of it, resonating through all of this. I want to thank all three of you for being with us today. John Negroponte, former Deputy Secretary of State, Director of National Intelligence. Thanks very much for being with us today, John.
Thank you.
Ambassador Michael McFaul, former U.S. Ambassador to Moscow, joining us today from Stanford's Freeman Spogli Institute for International Studies. Ambassador McFaul, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And David Sanger, are you flying with Rex Tillerson, or does he still fly alone and reporters can find their own darn way?
He's taking one or two reporters, but it's not me. So we're flying commercial.
All right. Well, good flight to you, and we'll look forward
to your
reporting. David Sanger, National Security Correspondent for the New York Times, thank you for joining us today as well. Listeners, thanks for all your calls and comments. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.